Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 14th, 2005. Today's session is entitled Seeing Everything at Once, What the Surrealists Can Teach Us About God, presented by Kate Ashwen. Disc number SCK-2005-04.
I think it's always funny because you always are tempted to say that line like louder somehow, like that he's not going to hear you unless you're loud enough. Well, usually we do names, but we're going to skip that part because we have a lot to cover today. I'll tell you my name, though. I'm Kata, and when I'm not at Holden, I'm in Iowa City, Iowa, where I study at the Iowa Writers Workshop, and we'll be teaching creative writing this fall. Today, we are going to delve into the crazy, wacky world of surrealism. But just to get started, just so we kind of know where we're at, when you hear the term surrealism, or that something's surreal, what does that mean to you? Just kind of throw out stuff. And you can be totally wrong.
Yeah.
Off-kilter a little bit.
Off-kilter, a little off-kilter, okay.
Otherworldly.
Otherworldly, okay.
Weird.
Distorted.
What did I say?
Distorted.
I thought you said restorative. That's interesting. Okay, we'll get there. Okay, distorted. Anything else?
The subconscious.
What?
Engaging the subconscious.
Ah, Paul's on the good. Anything else?
Something with an internal contradiction.
Internal contradiction. Okay, so we've got contradictions going on, subconscious, something's a little off. This is great. Good start. Okay. So, I'm just going to read this out. I know that you can all read, but it'll be just like second grade where I also read it to you. From the Second Manifesto of Surrealism by Breton. Who speaks French? Somebody's going to have to be the mic corrector. Does anyone here speak French? Awesome! So you all have a right now pronouncing it correctly. This is fabulous! Oh, now I might start speaking French. Okay, so from his Second Manifesto of Surrealism, which is in 1929, was published. The first one came out in 1924, because apparently he didn't cover everything in the first one. He says, "Everything leads us to believe that there is a certain state of mind from which life and death, the real and the imaginary, past and future, the communicable and incommunicable, height and depth, are no longer perceived as contradictory." Okay, so the two things that I definitely want to highlight here is like that we have a lack of contradiction in this world, that instead of having these opposites, that we're sort of blending them together in weird ways, and that for him, for the surrealists, this is a certain state of mind. A little bit later here, I want to get into, if I have time and if this works out here, what I'm interested in is, for the surrealists, it was a state of mind, and if for us as Christians or people interested in the spiritual road, if this could be expanded into a spiritual state as well, if it has anything to do with the spirituality of what God would like for the world to be like. I'll try to be as inarticulate as possible. Okay, so just a little bit of background here. Surrealism was a movement of art, painters and things like that as well. Dali's often put in that category. Well, I'm kind of going to go through stuff really quickly. I want to put forth also that I am not an expert on surrealism, so pretty much what's up here is what I know. You're welcome to ask questions, but probably I'll look at you blankly. So it was 1924 to 1945 are the general dates attributed to it, but I would say that it's still going on today, and I would, if you're interested in reading a contemporary surrealist, Dean Young is an amazing poet. Very funny, and I should be looking at one of his poems on Monday. He's phenomenal. So I would argue that it's still going on, but that's up for grabs. Dada was kind of the precursor to it. Dada didn't have much of a, wasn't quite so positive of a movement. Surrealism is definitely kind of more of an upper, more funny stuff going on. The weirdness a lot of times has more of a positive light. Although a lot of kind of the remnants of World War I and get in there as well. The one, ironically enough, Apollinaire is the poet that we're going to kind of focus on to begin with today. He lived 1880 to 1918 and sort of invented the term surrealism. It's considered a precursor, but not an actual surrealist. And then at the end, if we have time, I want to read through a poem of Adélia Prados, who's a Brazilian woman who I think makes some surrealist moves, I would say, in her poetry, but she also is very much of a Christian poet, and so that kind of gets more into the idea of to what extent are these juxtapositions, could this state of mind also be a spiritual experience for us? And please, I tend to talk fast, and I'm going through a lot here, so if you have questions, just throw up your hand or tell me to slow down. That's great. Okay, so Apollinaire. Here are a couple others who are more associated with the movement itself. Baudelaire and Rimbaud are also considered to be sort of precursors. Okay, so what is going on in Surrealism, Surrealist writing? Well, they were really into a certain state of mind they were trying to bring forth the subconscious as much as possible. Like, let's get rid of a lot of our rational thinking and delve into our subconscious, because maybe some real truths lie there that with our rational minds we can't get at that. So then the question is, well, how do you get at the subconscious, right? Because sitting here right now, we're all kind of, if we were told to write down a sentence, it would be coming more from our rational state of mind than from our subconscious. So how do we get at that? So they, first of all, believed that dreams were really important, that writing from dreams, writing about dreams, all of that kind of stuff, that's great. They also believed really firmly in juxtaposition. So juxtaposition being the act of putting two things next to one another for comparison or contrast, but also just, for them, a lot more just letting those things be side by side and seeing how putting two things that aren't usually next to one another, how does that change each of the things now that they're next to something that they wouldn't normally be next to? Does that make sense? Okay. So that was really important to them. Also, hallucinations, because that's fun. and word games, really into word games. A couple people that were here at the songwriting thing we did last night, we sort of did a word game there, and we're about to do a group one really quick. Also in automatic writing, which I'm going to make everybody do in a little bit, which is the belief that if you put your pen down on your paper and you're given a time limit and set to write and write as fast as you can, that at some point you might reach this place where you're writing faster than your rational mind can think. And so that you're going to start writing things that you might read later and not even remember that you wrote, or be really embarrassed that you wrote, or your rational mind might think, oh my gosh, that doesn't make any sense. But the idea being that your subconscious is making some sort of internal, deeper sense that maybe your rational mind doesn't even comprehend. Is that kind of, everybody kind of with it so far? Okay. So we're going to start out here with just a word game. And this, actually, you're going to think it's ridiculous, but I actually use this quite often if I'm stuck and trying to write a poem. And that is to take another poem, I guess you could do it with any piece of writing. Usually I've done it with other poems, but I'm just going to write down a sentence here. I heard there was a bee hike today, and I didn't even know about that before I wrote this sentence. So is anybody on the bee hike? Wasn't a very big bee hike. It was a wee bee hike. Okay, so we have a sentence, a bee buzz near the outhouse. Let's pretend that this is taken from an amazingly brilliant poem. It's not. But, okay, so one word game idea is we're going to go through this sentence all together as a group. For each word, individually, I want us to come up with the opposite to it, okay? And usually we think of opposites in terms of, like, if I say, black, you say?
White.
White. Right, if I say happy, you say?
Sad.
Right, we're trained in all those opposites. But then if I say be, you say?
Huh?
Oh. Right, like. So it becomes this really interesting thing where we say, okay, well, for instance, what's the opposite of, that's not a very good marker. That wasn't the answer to the question. What's the opposite of the word
Many.
Many. Great. Okay, how about B?
Mammoth?
Why?
Wait, what did you say? Wait, somebody said marmot?
I said mammoth.
Okay, wait, and what else did somebody else say? Why?
Slug.
Great, mammoth, slug, why? Great, anything else?
Jellyfish,
awesome. These are great, really, just. Okay. How about buzzed? We need a verb.
Slept.
Yeah, and if you put it in the past,
slept?
Mm-hmm. Is that right? Okay. What else? Hushed? Great.
Sang.
Hummed. Whistled.
Spoke.
So it makes you start, at the very least, it makes you start having to think about, like, what is buzz about? Like, what's the heart of the word buzz? Because you don't just start thinking about that to think about what its opposite is going to be. Okay, how about near?
Far.
Far or away from? How would you?
Far from.
Great. Anything else?
Nowhere near? Distant.
How about what's one place that's far from us now? Give me a specific place that's far away.
New York.
So for us, the opposite of near right now might be New York. What? Mumbling things over there, that's not right. Okay. What's the opposite of the?
No.
What?
No.
Any.
Mrs. Like Mrs. Smith, right?
Miss or
Mrs. like the
Mrs.
M-R-S?
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay.
If it's another language, it would be easier.
Yeah, it's true. Any other ideas for opposite of the? Okay, how about outhouse?
What did you say? Inbox.
Awesome. Okay, and see what he's done. I was gonna say this, but then Steve beat me to it. Is that we can either think of like the outhouse as a thing, like what's the opposite of the place where I do my business in the woods? What would be opposite of that? Or we can break this into two separate words, as Steve sort of did there with inbox. Okay, so what else?
Bidet.
Okay, spell that for me.
Is it B-I-D-E-T?
B-I-D-E-T.
B-I-D-E-T.
It's French, but you speak so well.
I know, that's right. I am fluent. Did I do it right?
B-I-D-E-T.
B-I-D-E-T.
That would be quite surreal with the diet.
B-I-D-E-T. Okay. More. Wait, what?
Kitchen.
Kitchen. Awesome.
Oh.
One more?
Mansion. Limo.
Limo? Okay, so now we have
constipation.
Okay, so now what we have is a lot of options to create a different sentence. So, would somebody say a sentence taking one word from each of these things? Martha?
Yeah.
Great. Could you do a sentence?
I would love to. Many, why, hummed, distant, Mrs. Mansion.
Awesome. Okay. Does somebody else want to try it? And feel free if you want to add words or take away words to make it into a full sentence. See if you can do that. No, you did it right. You did it absolutely right. But I'm just... Anyone else want to try it?
Many jellyfish. Whistled far from any limo.
Wow, many jellyfish whistled far from any limo. That's kind of cool, right? Like,
probably true.
Yeah. Anybody else want to try?
Sure.
Yeah, Ken.
Many slug touched distant, no inbox.
Many slugs hushed distant, No inbox. Awesome. Man, the slugs were hushing distant because they didn't have an inbox. Okay, so the point here just being, one, that it's fun and gets your mind outside of whatever box it has for what should be the next word in the sentence, right? Like, I mean, probably none of us would have come up with these sentences by ourselves. Also, by the time you're done and you've written a sentence, it's so far away from the original one that it's I would argue, we could have this as a different session, but it's not ripping off that sentence really, because you've subconsciously created this entire other world, and then you can kind of go from there if you want to. Okay. How are we doing so far? Everybody agree with it? Okay. So that's one example. Another example is give me a list of, name some countries in the world.
Argentina.
Okay. Namibia.
Tanzania.
Philippines.
Djibouti.
Gosh.
Argentina.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else?
Japan.
Japan.
Luxembourg.
All of these syllables.
Bali. USA.
Bali. Great. Okay. Somebody give me, I realize that half of those are spelled incorrectly. Okay, a list of words to describe your ideal mate or partner. Not necessarily the one you have. Your ideal mate or partner.
Way too dangerous.
How about rich?
Rich! That's beautiful. What else?
In what sense?
Hot. Sorry, she's still looking. How about a two syllable word?
Patient.
Patient. Did you say absent?
Rich, absent. I don't know.
Oh, this is great. See, this is where the truth about Holden Village comes out. Right? Everyone's like, oh, loving kindness. Rich, hot, and absent.
Well, if it's hot, it
should
be absent. I see, okay.
Tumbling.
Leaping.
Trapezing.
Awesome.
Fire
spitting.
Leaping. Trapezing.
Selling.
Selling. Somebody else said something in there that I didn't.
Fire spitting.
Fire spitting.
Barking.
Clowning.
Clowning.
Training.
Clowns are
reading towards me. Whipping.
I didn't say staff meeting at Holden Village. Okay. Now I just wanna yeah, what's next? The idea here is to talk a little bit about juxtaposition, about how words change when we put them next to something else. So somebody create, let's just look at these two categories first. Put some of these adjectives in front of these countries. Just say them out.
Well, funny Luxembourg.
Funny Luxembourg.
Patient USA.
Patient USA.
Rich Namibia.
Hot Bali.
Hot what?
Bali.
Hot Bali. Sounds like an expression. Wait, what'd you say?
Absent Japan.
Absent Japan. Okay, and then we could go from that and build it into a longer sentence, like absent Japan.
Fire spitting.
Absent Japan, fire spitting, and then we could add another place. Absent Japan, fire spitting in
Namibia.
Oh, absent Japan. Right. So how many times have you seen that happen? So The idea here being that sometimes if we have, let's try bald Argentina. Okay, we've taken it out of the context of it being about a mate. So when I say bald Argentina, what do you assume about what does that do for your description of Argentina? What do you see?
No trees.
No trees. Okay, so there's been some sort of deforestation. There's something going on. Anything else?
Mountain peaks.
Mountain peaks. Awesome. Okay, so that's kind of changing the description of Argentina, which obviously an adjective does, but also that bald has become not just a thing about hair, which it was when we were talking about it, I assume, but it's become a description of landscape, so that both words, by placing them next to each other, are getting changed in certain ways. Is that everybody on track with the juxtaposition factor? Awesome. Okay. So now we're going to read through a poem by Apollinaire called Theirs. And you know what? We're going to have to share in loving ways with one another. So I'm going to put... Can you guys all share together?
Theirs.
This is not going to help me.
I might get some sense.
True. I wouldn't know whether it was really other than
the... sort of get into a rhythm here. So let's start over here with Michael and Renita, and we're just going to kind of wind our way this way. Then we'll go with you guys in the front here, and then back. So go from Paul back to Steve, and then around the back of the room this way, over here, and then we'll come around the table if there's still some lines left, which hopefully there will be. Okay. Does that make sense? Just read one line.
We can start reading the French.
There's a boat sailed off with my beloved.
There are six wieners in the sky. At night's coming, they say maggots hatch open into stars.
There's an enemy submarine who plans to steal my girl.
There's 1,000 little pine trees bombed to hell there, here.
There's a gas-blinded infantryman walking by.
There's everything we packed to bits in the trenches of Punta Colón.
There's me moaning over a letter that has not come.
There's a wallet-sized picture of a girl.
There are frightened prisoners walking by.
There's a gun battery whose crew is fussing with the guns.
There's a postman trying up along the trail of the lonesome pine.
There's an alleged spy skulking nearby, invisibly disgracing the horizon of his disguise.
There's a bust of my love erect as a lily.
There's a captain anxiously awaiting word from the transatlantic.
There are midnight soldiers sawing wood for coffins.
There are women shouting, begging for corn from a bleeding Jesus in Mexico.
There's the Gulf Stream, so tepid and tender.
There's a cemetery filled with crosses by the river.
There are crosses everywhere on both sides.
There are Barbary figs, Algerian cacti. There are the long, tapering fingers of my girl.
There's an inkwell I made from an unexplored shell.
There's my saddle caught in the rain.
There are rivers that can't climb into bed.
There's love enticing me with softness.
There is a German prisoner carrying his machine gun on his back.
There are men in the world who have never gone to war.
And there are Hindus astonished by Western campaigns.
In their sad minds, they see friends never to be seen again.
Because we've made this war the world's great masterpiece of invisibility.
Thanks. Wow, that was surreal. That was surreal. Wow, you guys totally planned that correctly. Well done. So comments about this poem, things you notice, things you like, things you don't like.
No
I liked the wallet-sized picture in my wallet.
The wallet-sized picture in my wallet. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's disjointed.
Disjointed. Okay, what makes it disjointed? You're absolutely right. But you said, but not really.
I didn't say that.
Oh, did somebody say, but it's disjointed, but not really?
I said, what I was thinking out loud, I just said that these sentences are not related to each other.
Okay.
But in my mind, they are.
Okay.
It's all about grief and loss, but it's, he's sad about his girl and the world.
Okay. So you see connections between like that there's some tone that's kind of connecting a little bit. Okay, but definitely from sentence to sentence, some things are not staying the same. Like, for instance, is the setting the same for all of it?
No.
Okay, what kind of different settings do we have? Okay.
In Mexico. Europe.
Rivers.
Wallets.
Yeah. So going from those sort of like big expanses of native country to the very specific of what's inside my pocket right now. It's in this wallet. Let's see. Any other just lines that people liked or lines that were unsettling?
There's me moaning over a letter that has not come. Mm-hmm. It's almost like he's looking at the whole world and then he sees himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that there's an inkwell I made from an unexploded shell. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like that's what he's writing about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the part with the crosses and the cacti and the fingers. It kind of seems like they all relate in an abstract way.
Yeah. They do kind of. Okay. Well, we can spend a lot of time. Unlike some of the other classes, we've like really gotten into a single poem. Here, I'm gonna go quickly off of this. Obviously, some of the sort of juxtaposition we were talking about at first here was just simply two words next to each other. But here you see that he's doing it not just with words, but with sentences, right? That one, and sometimes within the sentences themselves, but specifically sometimes going from one place to another, from something that's funny to something that's horrifying, that there's that kind of juxtaposition that's going on. Okay, we're gonna do a little bit more brainstorming here, and then I'm gonna give you a special writing assignment. Okay. I wanna make a list here of beautiful objects, and this list could include physical objects that you would see around your house. It can include things in nature that you find to be beautiful. It could be the name of someone you think is beautiful. It could be a word you think is beautiful. It could be an abstract idea that you think is beautiful. Like we get to him talking about there are rivers that can't climb into bed. There's love enticing me. So love becomes an actual character in this. So just things that are beautiful to you and you know, maybe not to everybody else.
Foliage?
Sorry.
Calypso orchid.
Ooh, great. Yeah, as specific as you can be is great too. Yeah.
Feather dusters.
Awesome.
Hamburger.
Cereal. Oh, yeah. From where?
McDonald's
hamburger.
Rippling water.
Where?
In Holden Lake.
Okay.
Mill Lake.
What else?
Ten miles long.
Baby hands?
I like the word zephyr.
Zephyr, awesome. Maybe I spelled it right?
Yep.
How about people? Or if you think of somebody you think is beautiful, what specifically maybe about their face or their presence or a shirt they like to wear, what's beautiful
embrace.
Embrace? Where?
Where embrace?
Like
setting of the embrace?
Yes, or on the body.
I don't know, anywhere. In the dining hall.
Okay, dining hall embrace. What else?
Eyes.
Eyes, what color?
Blue.
Blue eyes. Good choice.
Sleep.
Sleep. Ooh, for how long?
When sleepy.
Sleep when sleepy. So, or how about sleepy sleep? Great, okay. Now I want a list of verbs that describe violent things, whether that's war violence or violence between two people or whatever. What are some verbs?
Skinning.
Skinning? Great.
Tearing.
Scalping. Shattering.
Lynching.
Shock and awe.
Dissonance.
Somebody else
quartering.
Said one I missed. What?
Quartering.
Quartering.
Cussing out.
Piercing.
Separating. Destroying. Leaving.
Burning.
Shunning.
Emasculating.
Shunning.
Killing.
Shooting, killing, thank you.
Dissing.
Dissing. Okay, great. Okay, so now, well, before I give you this part of the assignment, we're all going to try for 5 minutes to do automatic writing like we were talking about, where you put your pen or pencil on the paper and you just write continuously. And if you don't know what to write, you can say, I don't know what to write, I don't know what to write, I don't know what to write. You can write A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever you want. But the point is that to please me, you're going to just keep writing all the time. Because otherwise I have to come around and feel like I'm a second grade teacher like looking to know. But the idea, you know, the surrealist idea that we need to, that keeping moving will bring forth other things. You guys need paper, huh? Yeah. Who was had the paper?
What's at the back table?
Okay, there's extra paper and pens back there. Because it all begins in the same way with theirs. Okay? There's blank, blank, blank. And you can tell that, and in a lot of these sentences, most of them, there's a subject that's doing something, right? We've got, there's an enemy submarine plans to steal my girl. There's a wallet-sized picture, and it's in my wallet. There's a captain who's awaiting word, okay, right? That's kind of the pattern here. Theirs, and then a subject and what it's doing. So you can go, if you want to, use that and just go with what you think of. If you need a place to start, I would suggest with this list coupled with this list. because it's going to be some interesting juxtapositions when you're saying there's a calypso orchid piercing, whatever, right? You're going to immediately, and plus that'll just get you going faster, so you're not thinking, where do I start? And you could only go from this list, or you could not use it at all, but that's just a place to start. So when I say go, you'll start doing that. At some point, I'm going to say, right, because. At the very, his last line is, because we've made this war the world's greatest masterpiece of invisibility. And at that point, whatever line you just wrote beforehand, you need to explain it in your because line. It could make not any, it could make no sense at all. It could make complete sense, whatever. But when I say, because, that's when you write because on your paper, and you got to explain what you just wrote before. Does that kind of make sense? Does anybody have any questions? Okay.
About this?
What?
About this.
Yeah, right. All right, ready? Go. Right. does. How'd it feel?
Fun.
Good. Good. Okay, I want you to take about 30 seconds to read over what you just wrote, and I want you to put a little dot or star, whatever, by one of the lines, one of the theirs lines, that sounds least as though you yourself wrote it. That when you get back, you're kind of, there's a moment of like, oh my gosh, did I write that? That sounds least like it was something you would write. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Just choose one for now. And after you've chosen, sort of look up at me so I can see you. So, what we're going to do is we're going to go around the room in the same order we did before, only everybody's going to read their line that they just suggested. Okay? If you're really not comfortable with it, you can say pass, but I assure you that these are all going to be zany and crazy, and if everybody would read it, it would just make my heart happy. But I understand that sometimes that's just not people's thing. Okay? So if it gets to you and you don't want to do it, you can say pass. Now, I'm going to choose three people here that I want to read their because line instead that are spaced in intervals. Do you mind reading your because line? Is that okay? Okay, you're a because person. Jenny, how's your because line? Do you feel good about it? Okay, you're going to read your because line when it gets to you. And John, how do you feel about your because line?
Not too good.
Not so good. Okay.
I starred mine. That was one.
You starred your because line. Okay. Jenny, how do you feel about it? Can you do a theirs line?
Sure.
Okay, you do your because line. Okay, so now we're going to go, so how about, is there anybody over here who feels good about their because line?
I do.
Well, I'm trying to, like, space it out. Or, like, Ken, do you feel good about your because line? Awesome. Okay, so Ken, so we're going to get a because here, a because of Ken, and a because at our very end point. But otherwise, everybody's going to read the theirs line that they suggested. And just to remind everybody, we'll start with Michael, we'll go this way. By Jenny, through Dana, then back, what's your name?
Neil.
To Neil, and then across the back row, around this way, and through. Okay, are we ready?
Ready.
All right, and read it nice and loud and slowly as though you were a crazy, wild, hallucinating surrealist. Okay. Everybody take a deep breath. I now present to you the poem, Theirs.
There is the sound of one hand clapping.
There's an iridescent hummingbird lynching the bird feeder.
There's a fire truck racing towards a mud flat.
There's people weaving their life stories with many colored threads in the basement.
There's a chainsaw emasculating my heart because I don't do what I say I want to do most.
There's a skyscraper singing in the shower.
There's purple tree trunks falling over.
There's a trumped up charge of edible Eden pole that makes little but no sense. There's thornly pairs of underwear.
There's a husband missing his dead wife.
The desert dreams of being a million years.
There's a caterpillar in a jar in the attic.
there's a few bears on.
Okay, let's go to Paul.
There's a mouse dead in a trap.
There's a baby's hand quartering my soul.
There's torture nurturing zucchinis.
Oh, wait, do your because.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So wait, John, say yours, and then we'll go into the because.
There's torture nurturing zucchinis.
Oh, just the because.
Just the because.
Because the way it was wasn't working.
Let's just try that transition one more time so we can hear it. Go ahead, John.
There's torture nurturing zucchinis.
Because the way it was wasn't working.
There's a plane flying on the ridge with the engine off.
There are French fries crying in Zimbabwe.
There's not enough water in Lake Chelan to hiss out the flame.
There are milkshakes with glorious gladiolas needing help. There's people in Japanese pearls.
There's blue eyes cursing.
There's formica for friends arrive in teeth.
Because they do not know that what they await is their own demise.
Wow! Okay, round of applause! That was awesome! Wasn't that cool? Somebody else be with me here. That was awesome. Man, I'm like blown away. You guys were fabulous. That was great. Did it feel good? It's cool to hear. And amazing how they were coming together in really interesting ways, cool echoes and stuff. Awesome. Well, I would definitely love anybody that wants to show me theirs. I'd love to see if you want to continue it and then show it to me. That would be great. I'm always open to seeing these, and they delight me to no end. So I'm available if you're interested. We have 15 minutes left, and I would like to look at this. Pronounce it correctly for me, Wanda.
Adelia
Prado. And this is a picture of her. She is a Brazilian poet, and like I said before, would probably never ever consider herself to be a surrealist, but I think that she also makes really interesting juxtapositions in her work. So I want to read this poem, hear what you think, obviously, and then get at the question of whether the surrealists thought that all of these getting away from contradictions would be about a state of mind. And I want to know, what would it mean? What is it in her poetry? What would it mean for us to get rid of those contradictions in terms of our spiritual lives? Does that kind of make sense? Let's see here. Wanda, who's met her before, is going to read it for us.
Oh, you want the whole thing?
Oh, I want you to read the whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, why am I reading
it? Yeah.
Passion. What? Passion?
Yep, passion.
Once in a while, God takes poetry away from me. I look at this stone, I see a stone. The world so full of departments. There's not a pretty ball flying free in space. I feel ugly. Gazing in mirrors to try to provoke them, thrashing the brush through my hair, susceptible to believing moments. I become a terrible Christian. Every day at this time, the sound of a giant mortar and pestle. Here comes Gimpy, I think, and saddened with fear. What day is today, says Mother? Friday is the day of sorrowful mysteries. The nightlight glimmers. It's already humble gray, narrowing once and for all the black of night. Enter in the calm of the hour, the buzz of the factory in the continuous staccato. And I'm in heat, incessantly. I persist in going to the garden to attract butterflies
and the memory of the dead. I fall in love once a day. I write horrible letters, full of spasms, as if I had a piano and bags under my eyes, as if my name were Anne of the Cross. Except for the eyes in photographs, no one knows what death is. If there were no clover in the garden, I don't know if I would write this. No one knows what talent is. I sit on the porch watching the street, waiting for the sky to settle with dust. When I grow up, I'll write a book. You mean fireflies are the same thing as lightning bugs? They asked amazed. Over leftover coals, the bees, balloon in the black pot. A little jolt, the end of the prayer long gone. The young pullets did not all fit under the mother hen. She clucked a warning. This story is threatening to end, stopped up with stones. No one can stand to be merely lantern. A pain this purple induces fainting. A pain this sad doesn't exist. School cafeterias and radio broadcasts featuring calisthenic set to music sustain the order of the world despite me. Even the thick knots extracted from the breast, the cobalt, its ray pointed and painted flesh, upon which I have cast this curse. I refuse to write one line to you. Even these settle in among the firewood, longing for a place in the crucifixion. I started this letter bursting with pride, overestimating my ability to yell for help, tempted to believe that some things, in fact, have no Easter. But sleep overpowered me, and the story dozed off, letter by letter, until the sun broke through, the flies awoke. And the woman next door had an attack of nerves. They called to me urgently from the garden wall. Death leaves behind photographs, articles of clothing, half-full medicine bottles, disoriented insects in the sea of flowers that covers the body. This poem has gone sticky on me. He once shaped loose. He disgusts me with his big hat. I grab my shopping bag. I'll stroll around the market. But there he is, branded in his bill. Heels calloused like a woman's. Coins in the palm of his hand. It's not an exemplary life, this robbing an old man of the sweet pleasure of grandchildren. My sadness was never mortal. It's reborn every morning. Death doesn't stop the pitter-pat of rain on the umbrella. Tiny droplets, innumerable as the constellations. I trail behind the funeral procession, mixing with holy women. I wipe the sacred visage. All you who pass by, look and see. If there is any sorrow, like my sorrow. What day is this? Asked Mother. Sunday is the day of glorious mysteries. Happiness alone has body. Head hung low, glassy eyes and mouth, bruised feelings and bruised lips.
Comments, thoughts? Did you like it? Yeah?
Yeah, that's my favorite poem that I've got. All we've gone over, that's...
Awesome, why? That's great.
I can't even tell you why, I just... It's great.
No, that's okay. Are there lines that people particularly liked?
I like the one that when they started talking about clover. Garden. Can't find it now. But if there were no clover in the garden, I don't know if I would write this.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows what talent is.
What else, John?
I like the buzz of the factory and continuous staccato.
Uh-huh.
This story dozed off letter by letter, and this poem has gone sticky on me. You won't shake.
Except for the eyes and photographs, no one knows what death is.
I look at a stone, I see a stone.
No one can stand to be merely London.
Yeah, I love London too.
I liked, upon which I have cast this curse. I refuse to write one line to you.
Yeah. It's great.
Why, people think of reasons that you would include it as a surrealist poem, or that you would argue that it's not a surrealist poem?
It's just kind of all over the place.
Okay.
It's pretty disjointed.
Yes. So there's that sense of skipping from, as Neil was saying, the disjointed quality of that, the poem, the theirs poem. She also moves from different space to different space.
But there's still that grief and loss and depression running through it.
Okay. So a tone that kind of connects. Yeah, Eric.
This old man that appears in the last page.
Anybody want to answer?
What I think that to be really first reading was the poem personified.
Okay.
I took that to her. She's doing the writer's life, and she's disappointing her father by not bringing him babies and in the form of grandchildren.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So being the grandfather poem. So I guess then we have just 2 minutes here. What, I'm gonna go back to the question of these contradictions, because there's certainly, and if you read her whole book, you maybe get more of a sense of it, which I highly recommend. It's phenomenal. What did you say? Oh, you know, I'm gonna write it on the board here. Alphabet in the Park. And it may be hard to find, but I'm sure it's findable. Wanda, you want to do it again?
I think I put out the video.
What?
Who wrote the first?
That was Apollinaire, who's a French poet.
You wrote the Black Umbrella?
No,
theirs.
Yeah,
theirs.
Does anybody want to make a final thought on, final comment on sort of this idea of what it could mean for us as Christians to be able to contain within ourselves, within a poem or within ourselves, this sense of being disjointed or the sense of juxtaposing things that don't usually go together, or places that don't go together, or words that don't go together? What could that do for us, not just in our minds, but what could it do for our spiritual life? Does anybody have?
Well, the whole symbol of the cross that brings those opposing forces together of glory and suffering for all of us.
Okay. So that there's actually that emotional sense is kind of made manifest when we do these sorts of things. Okay.
There's an ancient tradition of talking about God by first saying God's like something and then saying, but not in that, you know, something is like this, but, you know, like, so like I'd say God is like a china dish, but not that God is fragile, but that God is beautiful and serves us. You know, that's
cool.
So you see that sort of here, the structure, you know, positioning, grabbing ideas out of an idea that, you know, work for you and rejecting the ones that don't.
Awesome.
It's also a, you know, reclaiming language. We talk about that here. God is like a father, but not like a father in that overpowering or tyrannical, but like a father in that God serves and takes care, you know, or God is like a mother, but not, you know. So.
And Luther was fond of saying we're all saints and we're all sinners. He was a bit of a surrealist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. It's all in there.
And I think it makes it possible to live the liturgical year in a society that's not religious in some way. Like, you get to the middle of Lent and you're fasting and you're praying and everything is all sort of, you know, you're waiting through your 40 days and everybody is just going about their business. And I think that there's something a little surreal about that. Or it's Good Friday,
mm-hmm.
and you're, I don't know, fasting, and your
yeah.
neighbors are having a barbecue, and
yeah.
there's something that's a little bit surreal about that too. And I think that making space for that juxtaposition in yourself makes it possible to live a religious life in an unreligious society.
That's great.
And live the mysteries of our own faith, and demystify our friends and neighbors not being religious at all.
Mystery is a great word, I think, that kind of contains all of those elements at once. Thank you, everybody. Everybody's line, I just want to say, was phenomenal, and whether you think it was or not, I'm telling you that it was great. So thank you for your wisdom and your poetry. It was great.
Thank you for the class.